present here today. Am I audible?
Yes, Chair, you're audible.
Okay. Please bear with me. You can see I'm in the dark.
Recording in progress.
I hope that we will be able to continue properly. I'm told stage two load shedding has just kicked in. Mine is 6 to 8:30. So it means if we run the meeting successfully, we will run it on my side, being in darkness. Are there any apologies that we received? Let me just switch off the video so that I can reinforce the network. At least you will have seen that I'm still myself. It's not just the voice. Are there any apologies?
Thank you, Chair. Ayanda is also experiencing some load shedding in the area. We haven't received any apologies, Chair, for this meeting.
Okay. Sorry, I'm just yes, I think we do to some one, at least I'm told we might 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. No, we were sufficient to start with the meeting. What we might have a problem until one member comes in is to, oh, no, we are, we are even equal to that now. Having said so, done the issue, Ari, can you flag the agenda? We will have a briefing by Council for Geoscience, then MinTech, and then those are the two. And then we'll have discussions. Sanedi, yes. Please don't shortchange us. But also, you are not compelled to stick to that time as proposed. Like me, I didn't. Straight to the point, so that we can know what you are pleading. We can also know where do you want to suggest how we could assist if we can, but at the same time, we can be able to deal with the real substantive issues that might be of interest to us. Can I give to the Council for Geoscience? I've heard the voice, Sorry. I didn't check. Mayor Kamede, you will take us through with your entities until the time allocated. Otherwise, you are not going beyond that time that is allocated to yourselves. It means if you go back to the agenda, it's up to until 7:15, Ari? 7:20.
7:10 is safe. 7:10 safe.
Okay. I have given you even extra 2 minutes. Mamu Kamed, if there is the executive, anyone from the executive is present, my apologies, I couldn't see that. That means if the minister or the DM, I didn't notice whether they are present. I've tried to go through the list that I see here. But for now, let me give to the acting DG.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, DDGs, and our managers, we, as well as our CEOs, in terms of, I think, CGS, Mintec, and Sanedi. We are then going to request that they do their presentations around their APP as well as their budgets, and that they would do so within the time that has been allocated to them. I will then ask CGS to do their presentation for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Chair of the PPC, honorable members of the PPC, acting DG, chairpersons and executives of the DMRE entities, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Humphrey Mate and I'm the chairperson of the CGS. I just want to introduce Mr. Mabuza, the CEO, and his team. But before I hand over to the CEO, let me just make just a few remarks. Firstly, I want to state that the CGS managed the COVID-19 pandemic very well. Although we had several positive cases, all associates recovered well due to following the correct protocols. And we've had no fatalities. Mr. Mabuza and his team have managed stakeholder relations very well, and the board is very proud with their achievement in terms of engaging, especially the Amakosi, the farmers, and the communities where we do our work. As a result, the CGS is now well known and is always contacted to provide solutions to geoscience challenges. Just before I hand over to Mr. Mabuza, I just want to mention three programs that the board is really excited about. In terms of our geoscience technical program, I want to highlight firstly that the Northern Cape program has delineated metals deemed to be critical to the battery and electrovoltaic systems. Firstly, of particular interest are the base metal mineralization potential of sedimentary exhalative zinc and lead deposits of the Griqualand West area, and then the nickel copper cobalt style of mineralization in the Kennard area in the Northern Cape. Secondly, is the expansion of the pegmatite belt and the delineation of the lithium and rare earth elements mineralization. Secondly, a great potential in the exploration of the Giani Greenstone belt, particularly the recently conducted drilling, which has confirmed the sulfide mineralization associated with gold and silver mineralization. Also, drilling has resulted in the identification of high water aquifers that have been, some of the boreholes drilled there will be donated to communities for potable water. And then finally, Honorable Chair, the carbon capture utilization and storage program has gained considerable traction and is advancing very well. The World Bank, which is funding the project, has expressed appreciation on the progress achieved. Honorable Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, may I hand over to Mr. Mabuza.
Thank you, Chair Dr. Mate. Good evening, Chair, Honorable Lizipo, Honorable Members. Good evening, DDGs, officials present, CEOs and board members of entities. will run through a snapshot of this presentation in the time that is allocated. Some of the slides I will run very, very quickly, Honorable Chair. These are really the slides that introduce the Council for Geoscience, and I think it is reasonably known. But I thought, in terms of our strategic focus, it's always good to start with the understanding of our vision, which is to contribute towards delivery of a prosperous and a transformed society that is enabled by geoscience solutions. And you would see that in addition to some of the items that Dr. Mate referred to, the focus of the projects that we work on in giving effect to the mandate as inscribed in legislation is precisely to contribute towards this vision in the main. This is a slide that that we have presented quite a number of times, but what it does is it articulates the summary of our strategy, what is our focus area of delivery, as it were. It enlists our strategic outcomes and indicates the areas of implementation of our strategy in the main. Chair, our strategy revolves around what we call the integrated multidisciplinary geoscience mapping program, as it were. In the main, there are five fundamental thematic areas in which geoscience finds expression. And we have linked those to the National Development Plan imperatives, as it were. And those are geoscience for mineral and energy resources, geoscience for infrastructure and land use, geoscience for health, groundwater and environment, and there are aspects of geoscience innovation and the extent to which we become an instrument for geoscience diplomacy in giving effect to the country's foreign policy disposition, as it were. So the plan for this year and the key outcomes that we envisage, to elaborate further on those examples that Dr. Mate had given us, and at the center of this presentation on the right-hand side, you'll see that at the center is geoscience, and these are the various thematic areas in which geoscience primarily finds expression. Of course, primarily we lean towards the minerals and energy in line with our vote, as it were. So what are these outcomes? The outcomes that we envisage is that South Africa becomes even more attractive a destination for investment in the exploration sector. And we envisage this by making available more information collecting information, processing that information, and making it readily available so that it can increase the appetite of the investment community, as it were. And in this regard, we are looking at delineating mineralizing systems of copper prospects, nickel cobalt prospects, lithium prospects, and gold prospects, among a much longer list in the entire program. Of course, when we're looking at the geosciences, we also interface with environmental systems, and we characterize and map them in line with our IMPP program. And these include regional groundwater and regional environmental assessment, and of course, taking into consideration the impact of climate change as we have recently experienced in the KZN province. And we look at the geohazards, land use and risk management. These are other applications of geosciences, as it were. And these are products and services that deliver actionable information on community safety, land use, and infrastructure development, which we do in alignment with a range of stakeholders across government and outside of government. It is our plan to develop and deliver a healthy pipeline of long-term innovative projects that are converted into tangible deliverables, as it were. And in particular, our greatest measure in this regard is the extent to which we have been able to contribute towards investment attraction in the exploration space. And all of these, in our view, is our contribution towards accelerated economic reconstruction and recovery plan as articulated by the president. So the next couple of slides just provide a bit more details of each of the projects. Our key strategic program is divided into onshore and offshore mapping. When we started with the offshore mapping, the country's coverage was marginally around 3%, and today we boast a coverage of 10.7%. And it is our intention at the end of this year to have achieved 12% coverage at a scale of 1 in 50,000. Now, the incremental coverage at this scale is already beginning to yield results in that it is beginning to provide more confidence on South Africa's geological information and the ready with which this geoscientific information is made available for critical decisions to be made, including the investment decision, as it were. On the offshore geoscience mapping, we have concluded now a service level agreement with the Navy, and that will give us some access to their limited boats at this stage while they are getting the main vessel. And that together with our own research vessel named after Mr. Nkosi will then help us to accelerate our offshore mapping program. This is a blue economy prospect for South Africa that has not been utilized and exploited to the extent to which it can contribute optimally to the development mantra that the country requires. And we're dedicating a lot of effort and energy into accelerating this marine mapping program, and we'll continue to do so in the current year. Chair, we have isolated the base metals mapping program. Our fundamental research in geosciences indicates that the base metal potential in this country, it's hardly been touched. And it presents a wonderful opportunity we collect the information, we make it available so that this information will then begin to persuade the investment community of this potential that South Africa continues to have. It is our considered view that these types of activities that we are embarking upon will have a profound effect on beginning persuade the investment community of the potential South Africa still has to the contrary. And those activities include, albeit not limited to, what is called the SEDEX style mineralization in the Namaqualand area, the lithium rare earth element, fluoride style mineralization in the Namaqualand and the Bushveld complex, the nickel, copper, cobalt style mineralization, also in the Namaqualand, as well as in Taba Nsizwa complex in the Eastern Cape, and the rare earth mineralization in coal seams. We are finding that our coal or some of the coal fields have elevated concentrations of rare earth elements, and we are testing to confirm that to the extent to which these may be economic, and the importance of rare earth elements in the new industries and the new sources of energy can never be understated. As we continue with the mapping project, we have published the pegmatite map in the Northern Cape that indicates the extent of the pegmatite, the Orange River pegmatite belt. And this we have just published a few weeks ago. We would be taking it to the mining in Durban next week as a product that the investment community can have a look at and see the extent of their appetite rejuvenated with the products that the government of South Africa is investing in and making available to project those win-win development, as it were. With the precious metals project, there are numerous areas of hydrothermal gold mineralization that have been identified. The chairman has already indicated the Kiani-Grindstone belt project. We have already drilled one target, 8 holes there. We are processing the data. It's looking positive and exciting, and we certainly hope that the outcomes will begin to bring about necessary development in that poverty node, as it were. This is the work that we are doing in Kiani. This is our own drill rig and our scientists and technicians on the ground as they drill, collect, and do preliminary assessments of rock chips that are extracted from this drilling exercise. And my team has really done a fantastic job. pardon me. They've done a fantastic job in identifying the sulfides that are generally associated with the gold mineralization in these types of settings. Of course, more analysis will unravel and confirm the potential in this area. In the Just Transition project, Just Energy Transition project, we've identified that geology can also play its role in contribution towards the just transition. Our map of geothermal energy potential, we have done it at a very high scale. We have identified numerous targeted areas of highest potential. We are seeing exciting results. It is still early days, and as soon as those results emerge, we would make sure that our shareholder department is duly informed of the outcomes of this geothermal energy prospect, as it were. The carbon capture project, I think the chair has already indicated the progress that has been made here. Safe to say that the Mpumalanga government and the people of Mpumalanga broadly have been exceptionally supportive. Our stakeholder engagement program has made them understand the importance of this research. They are supportive to the extent that a local municipality has ceded a piece of municipal land of 5 square kilometers for the pilot for the basin to be properly characterized first, and if it passes that test, for the pilot to be installed there. Big ups to the Mpumalanga community, as it were. While we're doing CCUS project, we also identify the potential of gold from the old drill cores that are there. And we think that this demonstrates a possible extension of the Vets Basin. The Vets Basin being that source of gold that we have traditionally sourced the product over the past 150 years. And if confirmed, it then means that the Vets Basin and its lucrative source, as it were, will continue for perhaps another century plus. On the Karoo deep drilling and geo-environmental baseline study, the drilling was seized at marginally below 3,000 meters, and the samples were tested for gas, primarily using South African laboratories, one in NEXA, another in CSIR, and another private laboratory. And the last batch of samples were sent to Australia. We now have all the samples back, and we are finalizing the technical report. It is looking positive in terms of one, availability of gas, and two, that the fundamental questions that the public were concerned about can then be responded to with scientific evidence, as it were. We're also involved in the infrastructure and land use project to assess the ground stability in various areas. I think this point has been illuminated quite substantially with the KZN and Eastern Cape disaster. The importance of taking into account ground stability as a consideration, as a serious consideration before any infrastructure decisions are made. And ours comes in timely, as we had started to engage with the district municipalities to give effect to the district development model, as it were. We have interacted with a number of district municipalities to this extent, and all of them have been but more than welcoming. We have done a national geohazard mapping exercise, which indicates areas of high susceptibility of landslides and sinkholes, and it helps us to give particular focus as it may be required. I'm going to run quickly. The Dolomite reports, we have reviewed just under 5,000 reports in the Dolomitic terrains since 2008, in line with the legislative requirements, as it were. And in the areas where these reviews have been undertaken, working together with the geotechnical industry, as it were, and providing the oversight responsibility, technical oversight responsibility, we stand tall and proud that infrastructure in those areas where we have undertaken these reviews has largely been protected. We are also undertaking the probabilistic seismic hazard analysis on behalf of ESCOM in their pursuit to extend the life of Kuiberg Nuclear Power Station. Our part of that exercise, our technocrats have their boots on the ground, and we are very confident that the outcomes of their of our research in this regard will go a long way in considering the application for Kuiberg and providing the necessary public trust that extension would have duly considered the possibilities of a disaster and its ramifications. We have looked at the aggregate mapping, particularly as an input for construction material for infrastructure development. We have designed this in line with the a strategic infrastructure program of the country. And we have just concluded the report now. Our intention is that this report can be used to primarily lift the livelihood of those people in the corridor for infrastructure development in the main. It is our intention to undertake that exercise in the shortest possible term. We also have partnership with the Housing Development Agency in the Khutsong Ground Stability Risk Assessment work, as well as providing technical support to the Free State Department of Human Settlement in the housing development geotechnical investigations. Chair, I'm mindful of the time. I want to run to the financials so that the CFO can take us through the financials.
Thank you, CEO, and good evening, Honorable Chair and Honorable PPC members and everyone in attendance. Of course, the good work can only happen if there's the money to give it legs. We have got here our I see this is the financial sustainable targets that we have to look after to make sure that the finances are used optimally. We've got a target there for overhead and against total cost percentage. We are managing our overheads. We want them to drive them down. Being the nature of an organization that we are, a science institution, and we are under a lot of regulatory requirements. To satisfy those, we need there's a base of overhead that one has to make sure that they have covered. However, they should remain contained. As well, we've got that measure that seeks to reduce the salary bill to a lower than 70%. Our nature, our science is done by scientists. Our engine is actually the brains, and that is that which we look after. To say, let's have personnel costs that are maintained at less than 70% of the total. Now, CEO, I see you're going quite fast on the other side. I'd rather we go to the budget itself so that we can. Yes, that's the better. Yes, you are on the right slide. So we have received with your support, members of PPC and Chair, honourable members, we are happy to actually appreciate that your efforts in us securing the 500 million rand that we need so desperately to accelerate the economic recovery program that is designed for the country has been realized. We are so grateful, and it's only that in this year in particular, we are doing the planning, coming in tranches of 200 million in the year 2023-24 and in 2024-25. And what the case that I'm putting forward for the CGS is, could we please ask you to sustain this baseline grant allocation, because our mandate is long term. The short term way of funding is not sustainable for the CGS, and with this kind of investment, we're definitely going to impact the exploration industry. Okay, CEO, let's move on to the next slide. All right. If you look, we've given the budget in terms of the MTF as required by PFMA for the next 3 years, beginning this year and the next 3 years. And we've got the previous year as a reference. But what one would notice is that because of the nature of the short-term funds that you used to receive, there is a dip now because they have come to an end in 2022-23. In this current year, we've got moving from 600 to 480. It's about 120 million decline. And that is simply because of the model that used to be. But going forward with the 200, if you see that highlighted 200 and 300 that I just talked about, and this is in the baseline, it's revert back to the 6 million mark, and we would want that maintained so that we can really go far with implementing our mapping program. On the cost side, already I've spoken about the personnel cost, which is the major part of the cost. Everything else that we do, we cut our assets to the side of the trust that we have. Every cost there is well considered, given that commercial revenue only be generated if you put in, say, for instance, the 55 million that we put there for. And then on the overhead and operating cost side, that is where the big change has happened. We've got monies that were short-term MTF funds that are no longer there. Now, in this year, we're going to be in a very hard year where we're going to be, you know, juggling funds there and there to survive. But at least it's the end of this kind of funding, in that we are now going to be receiving continuous funding in the baseline, as I've already said, in the years that come forward. To obviate this stress as well, to lighten it up a bit, we have also a collaborative revenue that we are looking to generate to augment this that we've got. And some of the projects wouldn't be, some are being, secured as we speak. We don't know what we don't want to, but we've got quite a pipeline planned of tenders issued out there commercially to secure more revenue. So we won't be retrenching stuff. We won't be doing anything that drastic. What we'll do is do sound financial management so that we go through the year into the next year. We do invest in our equipment so that we've got the latest gadgets as scientists should. In total, tender expenditure on the budget shown as 482 million for the current year. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think I will take the rest of the slides as read. Our human resources gives a breakdown of how we are performing, and particularly investment in the development of young people, bursaries, internships that we create at the Council for Geoscience in the main. And I put up this slide, Chair, to give an indication of where the information we generate is used. And as you can see in that global map, the information that we generate is used all over the world. And the graph at the bottom right side indicates the types of articles and that we put out. And there's a lot of interest that we receive from ordinary South Africans to whom we are making this information available. This is the slide that indicates what kinds of information is required. And we give statistics from January 2020 to March 2022. I'm delighted that South Africans are looking to the Council for Geoscience for the information that they require. Perhaps lastly, Chair, is to say that since the consolidation of the four geological surveys I can't remember what those things were called in the 1890s, they were consolidated to form the Geological Survey of South Africa in 1912. And so this year we'll be celebrating 110 years of existence, and we thought it fitting that we have a major or a series of events that demonstrate the value of geosciences to human development, to the broader population of South Africa, taking into account what has worked in the 110 years and what is still to be done for this country for the next 110 years. Thank you very much, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will then ask MinTech to do their presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Good evening. Good evening, Honorable Chairman and Honorable Members of the Committee. This is MinTech. My name is Futhi Zikalala Mbelase, the Interim Chairman of the Board of MinTech. And I'm here with the team from MinTech, our Chief Executive Officer and the Chief Financial Officer in the main. Said to you this evening. I am not going to go through the presentations in the interest of time, but also because they are here to do all the presentations. All I just want to remind the committee through you, Chairman, with your permission, is just that we are right now in the middle, really, of implementing our 10-year strategy, which we're really proud of, and we think that it's going to take our council, our science council, our company, our entity, MinTech, to greater heights. And we are busy doing that as well as just getting all kinds of, you know, really highly qualified, scientists, and really also investing in a number of young scientists that are coming through the pipeline who will carry through our strategy and the entity into the future. With those few words, Honorable Chairman and committee members, I am going to hand over to the Chief Executive Officer, Dr. Molefe Modugu. Dr. Modugu.
Oh, thanks, I was muted. Thanks, Chairperson. Can you all see my presentation?
Yes, I can see it, I'm sure.
You can see it, okay.
I hope that the Honorable Chairman and members can see it as well.
Okay. Thanks, Chairperson. Good evening, Honorable Members, colleagues, from and officials from our department, my colleagues from MinTech, and sister entities. I'll be brief on my presentation, just at high level to just give an indication of where we anticipate to end the year, and on the basis of that, then plan for 2022-2023. I will focus on the outputs because we have spent time discussing our activities. And I'll just briefly touch on some of those key activities where we believe MinTech will move a needle. Firstly, just to remind colleagues that first and foremost, the MinTech is a research and technology organization. We conduct research, whether relevant, applied, and technological innovation. And I'll talk to some of those programs and the outputs related to that. Coming straight from our act, it is expected of MinTech to foster the establishment of new industries as well as expanding existing industries. Of course, all that is done by our capable workforce. So the chairperson indicated that we have a new strategy, 2030 strategy. At the core of the strategy is the development of a capable workforce. Then we'll talk about the financials, but most importantly also we'll talk about the infrastructure that we so need to conduct the research as well as developing technologies that we need to transfer to industry. Just quickly, the red just indicates MinTech primary focus. Of course, we support the exploration activities and Tatema Buza, some of those samples, you need to bring them to MinTech. maybe I don't understand the ones that went to Australia to learn a conversation that we need to have. But also, we support artisanal and small-scale mining activities. We just signed a contract with our own department to train 20 women in mining. The red, this is where we have developed capabilities and competencies over the years. Concentration, this is basically supporting concentration plants. Extractive metallurgy, this is where we have capabilities and competencies in smelting, biometallurgy and hydrometallurgy, of course, refining. Then we add value. This is where we talk about manufacturing. This is beneficiation activities at Mintec, and I'll touch on some of those. And the latest addition to our arsenal is creating capacity in mine closure and rehabilitation. I'm reflecting, I'm bringing this slide to indicate that Mintec is a global player. We provide services to local mining industry as well as the global players. And this is our footprint. These are areas where we have deployed some of our technologies, our instruments, equipment, as well as the services that we've provided. This is important because of COVID, where there were restrictions on local and international movements, this really curtailed our ability to earn income. But also, we could not travel to service our clients. Now, we use this as a basis for our plans for 2022-23. We use quarter four 2022 results, preliminary results, then to project and to model and to assume where we believe will end the year 2022-23/23. If I just project preliminary results 2020-21, this is where unaudited results as we speak. If you look at learning and growth, and this is about our people. If you ask me anytime if there's anything that will keep me awake, Mintec's biggest asset is its employees, most specifically our researchers. And learning and growth talks to that. We have a staff complement of just over 500, 45% of that is our engine room, the boiler room. This is our researchers. What is worth noting, and this will be the middle column, 77 of that is black, 49 is female, 63% is black middle senior management. Now, we're investing a lot on our employees as we speak. When we started this journey, if you look at the SET, this is Science, Engineering, Technology, this is basically our researchers, we're sitting at 25% of our set cohort having PhDs. When we started this process, we only had 5%. This was 2019. So this is a remarkable achievement in 2 years to move to change the profile. Also, we moved from around 7% to 22% of our set employees having master's degrees. Currently, we have 13 of our employees studying towards doctoral degrees and 55. This is when we ended the year 2020-21. The financials, that's what it is. We are projecting a net profit of 25 million rand coming from a deficit of 53 million. So this is a remarkable achievement. But also on financial perspective, you can see the investment in human capital development, ACG sitting at around 9 million. But what we got also religiously is BE is spent sitting at over 100%. The bottom one, this is our outputs. on research, development, innovation. I'm not going to spend more time on that. Also because we have the capacity at MINTEC to conduct COVID tests. We have tested more than 7,000, conducted 7,000 tests. And these are our own employees repeatedly. Myself, I've been tested more than 10 times at MINTEC. This is an abuse, Chair. But also screening sitting close to 240,000. Now, the year under the 2022-23, these are our targets where we're going to guard religiously the female set under learning and growth, increase that to 55%. And thanks to Honorable Mahlaule, when you visited MINTEC, noting that MINTEC is doing well to make sure that the participation of women in research, our core business, is taken care of. And we're going to guard that very religiously. If you look at our set PhDs, we're modestly increasing that to 26%. We're modest on this because we have 15 of our employees studying towards doctoral degrees and 58 studying towards MSCs and honors. We cannot predict when they'll finish, but we anticipate that we're going to exceed this number. Just to give you an indication of our competitors globally, we did a benchmarking exercise where we compared MINTEC with similar research and technology organizations globally. Our competitors, if you just take KIST, is an institute in South Korea. 85% of their set employees have doctoral degrees, 85%. Globally, this number sits at around 45%. And this is why now we talk about capacity within our institutions to carry out their mandates. At MINTEC, we fall short. I'm the first one to accept that. Our target is for the next 2 to 3 years to up this number from 5% to 45%. Of course, we need to be financially sustainable. We project a modest profit of 2 million, and we believe that this will be achieved. What is important for us, we are starting to see that most of our employees are being targeted by industry. Our staff turnover sitting at 10%. We are implementing programs to make sure that we create a favorable environment for our researchers to stay at MINTEC. The research and development and innovation, this are our output, and I'll give more details in the presentation. Just to mention a few key challenges for us, if you look at the graph and you look at the black line, 2017, major increase in what we received from the state, and it started to plateau. What it says to us is a major reliance on state funding. It is good in a sense that we can support research programs, but this is not sustainable. And our biggest worry is the red and the pink, where you have seen decline over the years, and this is income from the local private sector as well as international clients. We're working on reversing the trend. If you look at the next picture, up to 2021, there's been a decline in local and private sector and international income, and the plan is to reverse that. It's modest. We have taken into account that the mining and mineral sector is depressed at the moment, and we're looking at other sources of funding. If you look at the engine room, and the focus should be on the red, SET. Historically, MINTEC had more people in support, meaning you have more people in ancillary services like finance, HR, ICT, supporting very few people. The red, these are the people who are doing research that bring income to MinTech. It's unheard of in our environment that we have this lopsided development. So we've been hard at work to change the composition, to have your engine room, the red, being more prominent than support. Our peers, currently MinTech is sitting at 55% support. Our peers are sitting at between 15% and 30% because they embrace new technologies, they're highly automated, they're highly efficient. So we're putting in place new system and processes to make sure that the engine room is prominent at MinTech. Now, let me just flag this. I'm not going to go into greater detail on our programs. MinTech, we have more than 100 projects. We just listed 8 here. These are our strategic programs at MinTech as well as national programs. This is why we believe MinTech will move a needle. If you look at the first one, establishment of rare earth elements industry in South Africa, we have been at the forefront in championing conversations about the role of rare earth elements. Currently, if you look at the debates between China and the US and some of the conflicts, actually are centered around China dominating the production of rare earth elements. South Africa, we do have rare earth elements. You have heard Dr. Mabuza talking about this, and we're working very closely with him also on the exploration for rare earth elements. It's a conversation that is needed in South Africa. We recently hosted a workshop with potential role players in rare earth elements. And we're going to continue that conversation at the mining in Daba. And after the mining in Daba, we'll visit one of the potential mining producers on rare earth elements, Pienskamskraal. If you look at energy storage materials, minerals, and these are enablers to just energy transition. You cannot talk about energy storage without talking about things like vanadium, copper, manganese, all the elements that we have in South Africa, including rare earth elements. PGMs feature very strongly on fuel cells or e-mobility, coal gasification. If you just take number one to number four, all these topics talk about energy. Whether the storage or generation, you cannot talk about wind turbines. The high capacitor magnets in wind turbines are rare earth elements. You cannot talk about battery materials without talking about vanadium, lithium, cobalt, some of the minerals that we have in South Africa, but stuff we have in SADC. If you look at the mining in Daba agenda this year, is dominated by energy storage or battery minerals. What it says to us, South Africa, we need to be talking more about strategy or energy minerals, or what we call technology minerals. Now, if you go to number five, revival of ferroalloy industry. Ferroalloy industry, most of the smelters have been closed and mothballed. At the core of that is the high electricity prices and unreliable electricity supply. So number one to number five, it's all about energy. Revitalization of iron ore, well-established industry in South Africa, but still has potential for us to continue to exploit this valuable resource. The next one, number seven, unlocking the Bushveld complex. Now, we have known the Bushveld complex, and Ramabusa will come in here, is known for PGMs. Associated with that, if you go towards Limpopo, the Bushveld complex has unique mineralogy where you have vanadium, titanium, and iron ore in the form of magnetite. The challenge is most of those miners, they are looking for vanadium, but they cannot extract vanadium, titanium, and iron ore, the three minerals together. Most of them, even the main major one, Bushveld Minerals, the only process vanadium, and they leave titanium and iron ore as part of the waste. Mintec, we are championing and we're investing here close to more than 150 million rand to establish capabilities, competencies to support industry to extract vanadium, titanium, and iron ore. And if we do that, we believe that we can add, in addition to the well-known PGM, Bushveld Complex, the vanadium, titanium, and iron ore. Of course, portfolio members have asked Mintec about our role in the health platform. Our entry into the health platform is based on minerals. We develop medical diagnostics based on gold nanoparticles, and this is an area where we are expanding on, and soon we'll be making announcements and we'll invite the portfolio committee at the launch of this magnificent facility closely with industry on the production of diagnostics kits as well as other pharmaceutical related activities. Of course, not taking away from our core mandate. I'm going to then move very quickly. If you look at our strategic objective on developing a capable workforce, these are our preliminary results. This will be column 3, where we believe we'll end the year, and the target for 2022-23. We're modestly very conservative to say we'll grow. But if you look at the areas that we are focusing on, it's really the engine room. Our researchers with higher qualifications, doctoral, as well as master's degrees. We did, of course, increase our requirements. To be a researcher at Mintec, you need to possess a master's degree. Not just saying that we are putting resources to make sure that our employees who don't have the requisite qualifications are supported. If you look at our employee statistics, top management, highly transformed, senior management, highly transformed, and we're tapping into the resources available to us in the country. What is important to know, the engine room, these are skilled, technical, academically qualified junior management and supervisors. There, we're tapping into all the resources available in the country. And this is our pipeline to our highly qualified researchers that we so desperately need. Scientific, all I'm indicating here that for a while, Mintec has been in the decline in terms of our output. Mintec is expected to generate knowledge, to disseminate knowledge in the form of publications. These are journal articles, these are refereed conference papers, books, book chapters. We are turning the corner, as you can see, from 2019/20, we are starting to turn the corner. And this is primarily because of highly skilled and qualified employees that were hired for the past 2 years. We've hired over 100 employees with experience and higher qualifications.
Babu Mtogo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know I load set it. Let's not load set the time. Can I give you 3 minutes to wrap up okay. So that we give sanity?
Okay. I'll just also indicate that these are our outputs and attacks for our scientific outputs and finances, the part that we got very religiously. is the balance between our current assets and current liabilities. If you look at the red current assets and the pink liabilities, what it says is that MINTEC can pay salaries for the next 8 months if nothing happens. We don't generate any income at all. Also, we are projecting to stay above negative in terms of profits. Our biggest expenditure is staff costs, and we'll maintain that. We plan to go back to receiving unqualified clean audit. From 2019, we moved from GAAP to GRAP accounting standards. We had to put a lot of system and process in place and training our employees, and we believe that we are turning the corner. Chair, I'll take just a minute to say thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. We will then ask Sanedi to do the presentation.
Thank you, Acting DG, and good evening to the Honourable Chair and the PPC members as well, and colleagues. Ms. Manamela will be taking us through the presentation, but before I hand over to her, let me just introduce myself. My name is Sicelo Tulu. I'm the Board Chair for Sanedi, and Chair, if you may just allow me to make some few opening remarks, I think in the context of the APP that we're presenting today. Chair, the board was appointed early January, I think mid-January, somewhere there, and I must say, Chair, that there were three, I think, important matters that the board... Yes, yes, Chair.
Your face is not located.
Oh, okay. Let me do that, Chair. Is it better now, Chair?
Thank you. Now you can then continue, Vinicius. If at least we can relate the face to the name.
To the name
even
and
if
the voice.
You can switch off, if you can switch off, at least let's just see the face.
Thanks a lot, Chair. Apologies for that. So, Chair, I think there were three matters that I would like to highlight. I think the first one, of course, was the review of the APP, which was due for submission, I think, end of January. So we had to just make sure that as a board, we satisfy ourselves. So that was the first matter that we had to complete. The second one was obviously, I think, the appointment of the permanent CEO within, you know, Sanedi. And I think the third matter was obviously to set up, you know, the governance in terms of the board subcommittees and making sure that there's proper oversight. So, Chair, I'm really happy to report that in terms of the APP, I think the board had to request for an extension from the department to submit by, you know, the end of February. That then allowed us to engage with the executives in terms of the process that they had undertaken in putting together the draft APP. We also then held a board workshop as a board just to make sure that we ensure there's an alignment in terms of strategy, but also to make sure that in terms of the SWOT and all the other, you know, elements that talks to the strategy, which obviously informs the APP, obviously make sure that they're aligned and in terms of what we're submitting today. I think thirdly was also to bring in some of the assurance providers in terms of the internal audit, just to make sure that whatever that had been put in place and the board had actually gone through made a lot of sense. So I'm happy, Chair, to say that although we started in January, but I think we feel as a board that we're sufficiently engaged with the APP and we're happy to recommend it to this committee. I think, Chair, on the second point of the issue of the CEO, I'm also happy to report that we have advertised the position. We've also conducted the interviews in terms of the interview panel, and soon we'll be making a submission to the minister in terms of the recommended candidate. So I think we're proud that we've turned around in a very short space of time in that particular area as we need to stabilize the organization. Probably on that note, let me also just thank as well Ms. Manamena for holding the fort while obviously this search is going on. I think she's been doing a stellar work in that particular area. And then lastly, Chair, in terms of the governance issues, I'm also happy to say that we have now established oversight committees, including the audit committee as well. So the committee can rest assured that we will obviously make sure that the implementation of the APP, we exercise good oversight. Without waste of time, Chair, let me then hand over to Ms. Manamela to take us through the presentation. Over to you, Ms. Manamela.
Thank you very much, Chair, and a good evening to the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee, the DDG of the DG of the Department, the Chairpersons of the SOEs represented on the call, and the CEOs that are on the call as well, and management of the Department and of the SOEs. So I'm going to take you through the APP, and I'm just going to focus on the strategic focus of the organization. I'm also going to just delve into the APP, looking at what will be our outputs for the year as well, and then I'll also touch on the finances of the organization. So in terms of our strategic focus, obviously SANEDI exists by an act of government, and we are directed by the law to ensure that we direct, monitor, and conduct energy research and development. So what I would like to just highlight to the committee is that in terms of our strategy, what we've made sure of in putting together our strategies to make sure that our strategies align with the national priorities. We have the National Development Plan goals, which are essentially, I think, what all of us are working towards, making sure that the vision that is outlined in the National Development Plan is achieved. We also make sure that we are aligned in terms of the reconstruction and recovery plans that have been put forward, and also to the national priorities, like I said, of government. And at the ultimate goal, ours is to make sure that at the end of the day, you know, once we have supported the transformation of the sector, that we still end up with a sector, or maybe end up as a country being very energy secure, that having energy, universal energy access, and then also having a resilient and a resource efficient society. Now, obviously, in terms of our strategic focus, what was key to us is to take into consideration the challenges that we are facing as a country. Right now, we have a number of challenges that are really, I think, fighting for our attention or also needing to be addressed. But then we also need to prioritize in terms of which challenges do we look at and which challenges perhaps do we leave for a later date, striking that balance between, you know, being responsive to the challenges that we're facing at hand and also whatever resources that we have available in terms of tackling those issues. I don't have to tell anybody about load shedding. I think we are all experiencing the load shedding. If you are not in load shedding now, you know in about 2 hours time, most likely you will be, or sometime later on in the near future. But there's also issues of dealing with the transition. There's issues around capacity and skills as we introduce new technologies, that as the disruption happens, you know, we need those skills that will be taking us through. We know we're dealing with challenges around maintenance, especially as the municipalities. You know, how do we deal with the aging infrastructure as well that we have also at the municipalities? Issues around the municipal debt that are actually resulting in us not being able, one, or resulting from our inability to collect the actual revenue, and also not being able to pay it forward to ESCOM, and that in itself creating some challenges as well. We're dealing with also other social issues around youth unemployment. How do we create or support the creation of an economy whereby we have a reliable, sustainable source of energy that can also be used to create the jobs that are needed by society, issues around rising costs. So there's a number of issues that we are dealing with. And in terms of our strategy, we are also trying to make sure that we cover some of these issues. Now, I'll just touch on the strategic themes That if you go through our strategic document, the five-year strategy that you would pick up, and that is actually being the driver, or is the driver in terms of the work that we will be doing as SANEDI over the next coming years. The first one is dealing with the issue around the climate emergency. As you are all aware, the climate change is a reality, and I think we just recently just experienced exactly how severe the impact of climate change can be. So we really need to look at how do we make sure that we decarbonize the economy, and what are the technologies that we have available, and how can we use those technologies to ensure that we decarbonize, obviously making sure that we strike that balance of, you know, making sure that as we transition, that we don't leave anybody behind, we don't negatively impact on the economy, we don't negatively impact on jobs, and all also the communities that will be hit by the transformation of our energy sector. Now, in terms of urbanization, urbanization is an issue that we also need to look at from an energy supply perspective, because that in itself is bringing across new challenges in terms of how do we deliver services to people. Now, previously, we used to have challenges where energy poverty or access was an issue, especially in remote locations. But now you're no longer dealing with energy poverty being an issue where people are outside of urban centers, but you're actually looking at issues where people are without energy resources, but still being within where the infrastructure is available to them. And that's also because of this huge migration that we're seeing into cities by people obviously looking for economic opportunities. The issues around municipal service delivery is key, because also, yes, it speaks to the issues of on how you're dealing with the impact of urbanization on your infrastructure and your ability to deliver services, but also it's talking to your infrastructure itself. I've already mentioned the issues around aging infrastructure, issues around maintenance, and also issues around the revenue collection, which are impacting on our ability to deliver some of the services, because in certain instances the infrastructure is just not good enough. There's quite a lot of breakdowns. And then in certain instances, we're just not collecting enough revenue to be able to actually afford to actually supply the service that people actually need. The other issue that we really are looking into as well is the issue around convergence, the issue around the ICT now coming in, being an enabler for us to actually deliver services. So we need to look at how do we use the developments within ICT to actually help us in terms of delivering energy services and also improving efficiencies within the energy sector. Okay. All right, so now getting into the annual performance plan, we have three programs within the organization, the first one being administration, the second one is looking more at energy research development and also innovation, and the program three is looking at energy efficiency, and then both program two and both program three are modeled around what is in the Energy Act in terms of the mandate of the organization. Overall, we're looking at about 32. Targets that we'll be hoping, not hoping, but aiming to achieve for the current financial year. Just looking at the administration program, what we are looking at here is just creating a conducive environment within which we can actually then be able to then implement what the mandate of the organization is. And historically, we have not really had challenges as far as creating that environment, service delivery environment within the organization, and we've been able to achieve unqualified audits and so forth, and keep the governance going as well, manage our risk effectively, proper IT controls and so forth. So we are happy that we will be able to continue to do this. Also, we've made sure that we are well capacitated as an organization so that we can have the right skills, the mix of skills that we need to deliver on our mandate. Now, moving on to the program, the two programs, two and three, which are the core programs of the organization. Now, obviously, looking at the five-year horizon, there are certain strategic outputs that we have sort of put forward in our strategy to say these are the strategic outputs from program two and program three from our core mandate that we would like to see having been achieved by the organization at the end of our five-year strategy. So the first one will be the development or the piloting of a smart grid systems. And if you take that in line with what we're trying to do with the smart cities, then that becomes quite critical, and also with the involvement of your renewables within the grid. So you need to have a very smart grid. The demonstration of greenhouse gas emission potential, linking it back to the decarbonization objectives that we have, as or the goal that we have as a country, as part of the global community. So we want to ensure that at the end of the day, with all the work that we have done, we have demonstrated the potential that is there within the various technologies to actually mitigate against the greenhouse gas emissions. Evidence-based planning critical, because of now, like I said, I think we're all grappling with the scenario where we have limited resources, but then we also need to make sure that we achieve the maximum amount of impact. So if we can provide information and resources and data that will enable energy decisions that are based on evidence, I think that we would have achieved our goal for this particular strategic plan. And then also we want to make sure that as we bring in the technologies that will then be transforming the sector, some will be disrupting the sector, but we also have the skills to go along with that particular disruption and also minimizing the impact of that transition. And this slide, what we hope to communicate is just in terms of our annual performance plan, exactly what are the different focus areas of this particular plan, obviously linking it back to the four themes that I spoke about earlier. Now we have skills interventions that we will be doing in this plan, and that amounts to about 4% of our activities. And knowledge sharing and awareness, which is critical, because if you're going to talk about the transition, how to transition, when to transition, it's important that create awareness in terms of, you know, what technologies are available, what skills are available or not available, so that then people can start engaging and knowing exactly how to plan accordingly in terms of the information, from the information that you've made available. Demonstrations and pilots, they are about 9%. So we have different technologies. There are, some are at different stages in terms of readiness. Now you need to pilot and demonstrate to say whether or not, you know, can we utilize these technologies in South Africa? Will we get the results? And then therefore you then going back again and communicating with the broader stakeholders around the work that you've done and the research and the outcomes of the particular demonstrations and pilots. Research reports will cover a number of topics, where whether it be energy efficiency or whether it be issues around specific technologies that perhaps you'd like to pilot or you have piloted, that you maybe want to share that particular information with the stakeholders. Data sets that we plan on developing, about 9% of our plan, and it's data sets around, for example, we do have data sets around solar thermal, we have data sets around wind data that we make available to the masses. And then we have energy efficiency interventions. It's about 28% of our plan. We know that energy efficiency is called the first fuel. So if you can do all of these other initiatives, but then are not resource efficient, then basically are counterproductive. So we need to make sure that as a first, as a starting point, that our systems are energy efficient. So there's about 28% of the plan. Research funding support, so we provide research funding to people wanting to conduct certain research work, and then also to students, and that amounts to about 11% of the plan. Technology roadmaps, so there's a number of technology roadmaps that we plan to develop and some that we plan to update, and that will be about 6% of our current plan. And then energy status reports, which are important because you need to know exactly where you are, you know, relative as well to the international community, relative as well to where you want to go, so that you can be able to make the right decisions and plan accordingly. And this is information that is not only relevant to government, but various stakeholders within the energy sector. And then in terms of energy performance standards, that's about 2% of our plan. And then if you just look at the graph that is also on this particular slide, that is just to highlight that in terms of our research and the work that we do, we're not only looking at one technology, but we're trying to look at a number of technologies, because it's important that we investigate the probability or the possibilities including many more of these technologies within our energy mix. And that will link back to our ability to make sure that we are secure, energy secure, and also that we can provide access to energy services. Now, in terms of impact areas, I think we've had a number of presenters before me talking about the just energy transition. And I think we're all aware of the need to transition, the need to decarbonize. So there is a number of projects or research projects that we are planning on doing for the year. And I'll just highlight a few. I will not go through the whole slide. I think it's just quite a list of reports. I'll just take it as read. The WASA phase 4, we're still looking at wind, but we're now looking more inland in terms of the potential, in terms of having...
Let me give you your summary of 2 minutes, please.
All right. Okay. So I'll just say the high level areas where we'd like to make an impact as well is just on the just energy transition. So you know we need to transition. And then I'll just skip that part, and then also energy planning and decision making, where we are working very closely with the department just to make sure that we are aligned in terms of priorities, and we're having a number of workshops in terms of the areas that we will prioritize for this year. There's a number of areas already that have been agreed upon, and those are the ones that we will be pushing for the year ahead. And then the hydrogen economy, very important, especially if we're looking at the transition. I think there's always, they've spoken about the minerals that are available. Very good for South Africa if you can get involved in the hydrogen economy, especially with the minerals that are being available. And then energy efficiency, I've already touched on to say that is very key. I'll just go through the budget summary quickly. In terms of the budget that we are working with for the year will be 125 million, 65% coming from the MTF allocation, 35% from other sources. There is some funding that will be coming through from the EU that we've been able to raise. I think ours, because of we know that the funding from government is very limited, so we try and always make sure that we look for other opportunities from climate funds that are available so that we can fund the rest of our strategy. And in terms of our APP that we're presenting to you today, we are happy that it's adequately funded. In terms of the balance, in terms of the program, the expenditure, 60% of our budget is actually going to core programs and 40% to administration. 36% of our budget, actually expenditure budget, goes to human capital costs. And then 64% of that is actually goods and services. And just in closing, Chair, we will be celebrating 10 years of Saneli's existence this year, the 19th of July. It was also celebrating the significant contribution that Saneli has made to the country, and we hope to continue to make the significant impact in our economy as we're dealing with all these new challenges that, you know, within the energy sector, that we also need to make sure that we're providing solutions to. We hope that in the next 10 years of our existence, we'll look back and able to say this is the impact again that Saneli has made to the energy sector. So with that, Chair, I will stop there. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, these are all our presentations, and then we will then hand over to you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, CGS, Mintec, and Saneli. You can see we work very hard even in darkness. It's completely dark. I'm sure you can't even see me. And even if I can open the video. I note that I got the message. Many members are affected by this load shedding, and mostly it's 6 o'clock to 8 in most of the areas. In fact, some up to 8:30. Having got the report, are there, maybe we may have an advantage and a disadvantage of having interacted with CGS and Mintec on our visit for the acid mine drainage program. Can I, are there any questions of clarity, honorable members? I see the hand of Honorable Lorima, the hand of Honorable Mailem, the hand of Honorable Malinga. Is there any other hand? Okay. I will give the Honorable Lorima, Honorable Mailem, and then Honorable Malinga.
Thanks, Chair. I'm going to ask questions to CGS and Mentec. Yeah?
Good. All of them.
Yeah, those are the two that I want to ask questions about. I'm going to start with CGS. Firstly, look, I mean, just in general, fascinating projects that are going on here. When do you expect to see tangible results from the Karoo deep drilling? You said that you're expecting a technical report. When do you expect it? Do you expect it this year? If so, when this year? And once that technical report is revealed, what's the next step? The second is a question about your financials. You've got personnel costs over the next 3 years increasing about 8% a year. So does this mean that you take on more people? If so, who and for what and when? And if it's not taking on more people, is this a rather healthy annual salary increase for your current staff? Moving on to Mintec, very interesting presentation again, nice and upbeat, but I just want to caution that whenever you say you're earning a profit, it's only a profit because you're getting a whacking big subsidy from government. And this is of this is my biggest concern with Mintec, is that from 2017 things suddenly worsened in terms of the commercial revenue, and that was before all the current crises. So could you give us an explanation perhaps on what happened around that time to decrease the amount of commercial income that you're making? Then also with Mintec, the rare earth elements has been talked about since I started on this portfolio in 2012, but it never seems to take any kind of major move forward. There's been talk for a long time about a smelter. What's the prospect for that? You say you're going to be meeting some people at mining in Darba. It just sounds to me like this program is stalled. So how realistic are hopes that we're actually going to take a next step, and what is that next step? Mr. Chair, I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to address my comments to Mintec, first of all, and then to Sanedi. And I'm going to ask the same comment or the same question that I've asked every time we've seen Mintec, starting when I first started on the portfolio 3 years ago. And that is, what is happening with the commercialization of the various research projects that you have spoken about? I raised the issue with the board then and the CEO that there was an urgent need for a commercialization manager to take the ideas that are developed at Mintec and to make them viable for business and to get them out into the commercial market and really start generating revenue from them. And it follows on to what Honorable Lorimer was talking about. And then to Sanedi, I got to admit, I'm at a little bit of a loss with Sanedi, and I'll tell you why. So I spent some time going through the Sanedi website, and I don't see a lot of original work in what Sanedi is doing. I see a lot of links to other people's websites, a lot of links to other organizations and things like that, but I don't see reports. You've got as your targets for the year, so many reports and so many this and so many that, and I just can't find these documents anywhere. So what's happening to them? Where are they? What's being done with them? And that then brings us to the actual presentation that we received from Sanedi. If I go to slide 8, okay, which are your core programs 2 and 3. First of all, I have no idea whatsoever what that graph is meant to represent. I don't know what it tells us. It doesn't have any kind of, is that the number of targets you've achieved? What is that? And then if we go to the next slide, your planned initiatives, this is where I was saying, okay, so you've got energy status reports. How do I access those? How do I see what it is that your outputs are? Where are these energy efficiency interventions? What are the outcomes of that? What are you doing with the work that you do? Where are these standards that you're talking about, the energy performance standards? How do I see that that's being implemented? I'll give you an example of a really tangible one that I think is actually quite good. Is on slide 12 in the pack that we were sent. Under the heading Smart Grids, you've got the development of an asset management policy strategy and governance framework for municipalities. I think that's an excellent idea. I think that's brilliant. But where is it? And how are you taking it from concept to actually getting implemented in those municipalities? What's taking it that next step? So I realize that that's a planned activity and it's what you want to do for this coming financial year, but I don't think it stops with the development. There's the tangible next step to actually taking it out and getting it implemented in the marketplace. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings. Good evening, everybody on the platform. Let me not dwell on greetings because in Sebu Mnyame, surprisingly so, Chairperson, everybody, when we are being load shed, remembers that municipalities owes ESCOM. it's so funny. Chair, let me welcome all the presentations by CGS, MinTech, and Sanedi, and shoot straight to CGS. Chairperson, on their slide that is linked between the budget and strategic programs, I think on program 5, which is the delivery of the mandate, is where it's responsible for the largest share of the allocated budget. The output on program 5 rely on maps and reports, Chair. What happens with the maps and reports once produced? And how are these maps and reports going to help improve poverty and unemployment in the country? Chairperson, on their annual plan 22-23, CGS admits on numerous occasions that diversifying and exploring mineral and energy resources require access to land, which is currently a serious challenge in our country. If CGS wishes to resolve access to land issues to fulfill its mandate, why is this not added on as their indicator on the annual performance plan? Chairperson, also on DMRE APP master document indicates that the CGS implement the water ingress project. But the presentation by CGS is not clear how much of the budget is being allocated to machine learning techniques to map groundwater resources, and when will these techniques be piloted to other areas, provinces outside Maluti Apofing that experience water challenges? Chair, my notes, yeah, I can't see now. Chairperson, on MinTech, Dr. Mtuku always it tells the committee that they need people with PhDs and all that to get their work done and efficient and qualitative work done. On the presentation, Chair, I hear that they have partnered with the DMRE to train 20 women in mining. Shouldn't they have maybe on that program, maybe prioritized to have people or take people with PhDs to school in order for them to achieve what he's saying they are lacking as an entity? Because I know that the Department of Higher Education and Learning, once you do your master's, your PhDs, they pay for you. Last I checked, it was like that. Chair. So why would they go and train minors? Not that I'm against women being trained. I am for women, you know, Chair. But for them to achieve or to be at par with their counterparts, because he also said they have staff at a level of 55%, whereas their counterparts are at between 15% and 35%. Wouldn't it have made sense, this partnership with DMRE, to train more of their PhD people so that their work is made more easily? Chairperson, I only have one question for Sanit, of which now I am as confused as Honorable Maylem. But what are they celebrating with the 10 years, Sanit? Because I don't hear anything. There is a slide when the presenter was finalizing, talking about funding. There's EU funding. I just want to get clarity, Chair. Are there on any conditions on that funding so that we don't sell the sovereignty of the country to the European countries? Thank you very much, Chair.
Is clear, but thank you, Mudir. Kanjela answered as a brief. Look, I don't want to go into details on some of these issues, but I think again, let me make this apology. I might have made an oversight on this thing. Can I request, before we finish, Mr. Mabota, on the few especially that are left, because I think we must have a better summary, just a consolidated summary of a comparative exercise of the presentation by the entities to that one of the main, which is the report of the department, so that we can have a sense of synergy. We call it cooperative governance if it's different layers or levels of governance. I think what members some were raising here are issues that we may have to revisit them even beyond this process. I always feel that the way at times we handle this process of APPs and budgets, it's maybe it has been traditional. I think we need to know, for our own role, responsibility and duty, we need to know each and every cent where it is directed, whether it is directed really to the cause, or whether what is being presented is really what is supposed to be a priority. Thirdly, whether what is presented, it is something that will add value for money. For an example, I think somewhere down the line, and it may not necessarily fall on the department, somewhere on the line, some of the activities, which to me can even be what I would call internal exchange or trade amongst the state itself. I hear there are things like your investment conferences, the now we've got the mining in Daba, there are many of these activities. I think the point that members have been raising, even now when you look at MinTech, Sanedi, and CGS, you get the sense that I'm sure when you go to entities like Nexa, that could even include CEF. I'm not sure, I might be wrong, whether government has made a consideration of having either a chief marketing officer or something to that effect, someone who is responsible to ensure that what the state produces provides the required results. For an example, the point that even Honorable Malinga is raising now, in as much as you may get an answer, I don't think it's a uniformic system. How do we deal with issues of international trade by our own entities? What guides? What is the policy guide or direction? But it's okay. Can I give you, through you, Mabukamede, the entities to respond? Yes,
Thank you, Chairperson. I will ask Mintek to respond. And then after that, it will be Mintek, and thereafter will be Sanedi. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. Let me start with the question from Honorable Lorem. thanks for the observation of 2017, what happened there. Maybe let me start by saying, even though the graph reflects dependence on state funding, we only received 250 million as a state grant. The rest, we have to earn it from competitive processes. The 340 million that we need over and above the 250, either we apply to National Treasury or to DSG, if it is government, or to industry to end that. It's not given to us. So that part, we are reflecting that over and above the 250 million we receive from the state, we still go to DST and earn it through some programs like our hydrogen and fuel cell program, which is fully funded by DST, but it's not part of our state grant. We count it as public sector income. We still go to Technology Innovation Agency through a competitive process. We still go and bid to National Treasury under NTEF to earn those funds. But also we go to industry to earn more than 150 million. We still go internationally, either Horizon 2020, to earn millions. If you look at just our products that we sell internationally, that income is over 100 million. So the concern for us is locally, mining and mineral industry is not supporting or funding research. Actually, they've decommissioned their research programs locally, and they fund that internationally. It's a major concern for us. So it's something that we are paying attention to. And you are raising then an important point of this rare earth element story that has been around for years. It's a concern to all of us. There are two parts to it. We might have been ahead to start saying South Africa, look at rare earth elements. There was no traction locally about having this open conversation of what rare earth elements mean for the country. Let's be honest about it. Other countries, they've moved ahead. China, the US, they've moved ahead. The problem that we're facing in the country is not the technologies that were developed by Mintek to treat and to produce rare earth elements. The problem that we're facing is that nobody is producing rare earth elements in the country. You start with Steenskamp Skral, Glenova, you mentioned them. Nobody's producing rare earth elements in the country. And that's a concern for us. What they said before is that even if they can produce rare earth elements, there's no guarantee that we'll be able to treat them, to process them. Mintek has de-risked that And say if they can be treated, MINTEC develop a technology to treat the different ore bodies or rare earth elements from different sources, South Africa, SADC, that should not be an issue anymore. And many people are saying, yes, the US is looking at sources outside of China. It's more pressing now. It makes business sense now for many countries to look outside China. Maybe they were not ready a few years ago, but we'll take it that there's a push. We were approached by the US embassy. They came to MINTEC to say, we are ready. Even the plan that you are talking about, we can fund it. That was not the case 5 years, 10 years ago. The dominance of China was not felt in a manner that many people are feeling it now. Then it was all about electronics. It's more than electronics. It's about renewables, it's about energy. So what we are saying for us, the time is ripe for us to make sure that we can move the needle. I share the same sentiments, Honorable Lorima. It has taken us too long as a country. And I'm saying that in front of my colleagues from the department, that also this should be treated as a strategic program, more than a program driven by an entity. That's our plea. Honorable Milam, I don't know how to respond to you because this is a question that you raise all the time, commercialization of our ideas, and we share the sentiment. Let me be honest with you and say, MINTEC did not have the capacity to commercialize its research outputs. It's a statement that I'll put it out there. First, what we did, we established MINTEC Office of Technology Transfer, and we employed specialists in the area to help us to move our ideas from concepts to commercialization ideas. This was done several years ago by many entities, even universities. It's shocking that MINTEC did not embrace that. We have done that. It's a water honor, the broch, water under the bridge. We have moved. MINTEC is building capacity on business development and commercialization. That's first. Secondly, probably you have heard us talk about test kits for many, many years, probably 10 years. We made progress. We said we cannot rely on the same scientists who bring ideas, and we burden them also to develop products and commercialize. To that effect, we went out and hired people in the space. We started to build capacity. We went to health companies, pharmaceutical companies, and recruited one of the best in the country, Ms. Karen Kruger, to come and help and head our commercialization efforts on test kits and related to health products. And to that effect, I'm happy to announce that it took us less than 6 months to sign a contract with a company in Cape Town to fast-track our test kit development. When you pay us a visit next time, we'll give you a working prototype on COVID test kits, HIV test kits already. In fact, we're ready to share that with the portfolio committee. Then we have 18 products that we bought the IP, what we call the we buy dossiers that are readily available that we are commercializing through. We're not going to be building capacity at MINTEC to manufacture. We'll do contract manufacturing. That will be in place before the end of the year. So we've taken a different approach to rely on scientists to commercialize, to say we'll hire people who have done it before to come and do it at MINTEC, which is a departure to how we traditionally handled commercialization at MINTEC. So, Honorable Milam, I share your concern, but I'll be saying before the end of the year, we will be there in the market with our products. That's a commitment from us. Honorable Malinga, a PhD, sometimes I don't know how to say, because what we hear is that MINTEC, all they want is just PhDs, PhDs, which is not true. To do research, you need a higher qualification. Minimum is a master's. But when we train women in mining, we don't need PhDs to do that. We have people who are highly qualified to train on mining-related issues, which is not a research question. On research, definitely we need PhDs. On a non-research project, we use relevant, highly qualified people to do that, who have the requisite experience and qualifications to do that. And the requirement is not a PhD to do that. We do a lot of things. In addition to mining, we do training on jewelry, we do training on all skills related activities, which are not necessarily research. And that we don't deploy our PhDs to do that. So it's an area that from our side, we're improving the quality of our offering to make sure that at the end of the program, the individuals that we've trained, actually, they are able to execute. And most importantly, because some of them, they want to participate commercially in mine activities, so we empower them to do that. Thanks, sir.
Is it my turn, TG? Council for Geoscience? TG?
Sorry, Mr. Mabuza. Yes, I think it's your turn.
Okay. Thank you very much, TG. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Honorable Lorimer, what we were demonstrating was precisely the point that South Africa is far from being a sunset mining industry. To the contrary, it is right at the beginning of its renewed life cycle, and this is the value that geoscience is bringing in terms of how we are studying these projects and packaging them and bringing them forward as the value proposition for investment in the exploration, primarily in support of the minister's recently released exploration strategy, as it were. So on our side, once that work is done, and we will have a staggered, so we have a pipeline of projects that go through the proverbial war room. So we have this war room of geology where we just look at the geoscience of the country and identify possibilities, and we have a long list of a pipeline of projects. And as information evolves, we then develop an apex of priorities so that we can then demonstrate the value. Now, once this information is concluded, in the same way that we have now published the pegmatite map, which I'm hoping will take it to the mining Indaba as well. The next step is precisely that, to make that information available. So that those who are in the exploration space can then look at this information and look at how they can best utilize it to inform their investment decisions.
Of course, we are also looking at using the first mover advantage principle to the extent that there would be opportunities that we explore to partner under certain strict conditions that will not undermine the mandate, the legislative mandate. In the exploration phase to a certain point, and that is the part that we are still delineating internally. So when we undertook the strategic reorientation of the organization and began to realize how much we have that how much we still need to catch up, and the balance between the expertise that we have, the young people that are in the pipeline that are coming in, as well as some of the very specialized skills that we will require to deliver this project, we had to look at growing the organization by about 10%, 8 to 10% in the next 3 years, with particular focus of recruiting specialized skills that we may not have in the Council for Geoscience. For instance, you would know that we have not been an exploring country in the recent decades. And we have not been looking at our geology and packaging it in a way that it begins to talk to the exploration community as our competing jurisdictions do. We are great experts in doing the geology generally, and the extent to which we can take this geological output and package it in a way that will resonate with the investment exploration investment community is an area that we have found that we need to strengthen. It is there, but it is limited. And so those are just some of the very specialized areas that that we would be looking at. And we thought that a growth of 8 to 10% to achieve that objective is a reasonable growth in the personnel cost. Honorable Malinga, I think as I was indicating with the pegmatite map, so what is the value of a map? Is it just a paper with colors that are there? The true value of a map is that, let me start with the pegmatite belt, is that until now, not many South Africans thought that there is rare earth elements in this country. We take the geology program, we get them on the ground to do the mapping after having looked at what we have, and map it in a particular way so that it can unravel the details that are required in order to get to a certain point where critical decisions are made. And that is the real value of a map, is when a map can re-inform and redirect a decision to invest in South Africa, because the Council of Geoscience has contributed in mapping and making that map available. What is the value of a map again? It is when the geological information has been used to identify a highly susceptible area for landslide. And if a municipality was thinking about putting a township in a particular area, they have gone and looked at that map and they made the decision that this is not a proper area to put people. That becomes the value of the map. What is the value of a map? Is when a map has identified groundwater potential in areas where there's water scarcity and there are people that are living in that area in the same way that Cape Town was facing, the Western Cape in general, was facing a zero, a day zero water supply only a couple of years ago. To the extent that a geological map can be used to augment the supply of water when such a potential humanitarian crisis faces us, that becomes the value of a map. And I could go on and on, but I hope that Honorable Malinga, you can appreciate that these maps are fundamental products that are very critical in decisions that we make as a nation, developmental decisions that we make. An investment and a value that cannot be ignored by any imagination. Honorable Malinga, on access to land, what we have done, and part of the reason you are not seeing it in our IPP, is that we invest quite a large chunk of our resources in stakeholder engagement programs. So we have developed a dedicated stakeholder function within the CGS, and up till now, it's a program that I have dedicated a lot of my time in establishing and directing so that our stakeholders can appreciate the research, the geoscience research that we do. Part of the reason I was acknowledging the people of Mpumalang, it's not that we came there and we wanted access to land and we got it. It's because before we went there, we dedicated and invested a lot of time in interacting with various stakeholders from the administration of the province at the provincial level, district municipality, local municipality, farming community, NGOs, businesses in the area, ordinary citizens, and so on and so forth. And we have found that the stakeholder engagement program does secure us the necessary access to deploy our strategy. So if we have found a solution to it, we didn't think it would be necessary for us to continue illuminating that problem, as it were. South Africans across the length and breadth of our land have increasingly been absolutely supportive of the Council for Geoscience and the work that it does in the various areas. And we do not go there and make promises that are undue. We indicate that we are doing the science. We are a state-owned entity. We are not a private business. We have a popular phrase where we say, in science, we don't know what we don't know. And often negative results, we consider them to be what we call a technical success. I hope that addresses the concern. Honorable Malinga, on applications of artificial intelligence, Malu Tiapofung is just an example of where we piloted the applications of artificial intelligence. We use that across in all our projects. We have developed artificial intelligence tools to identify mineral targets. Of course, the tool is exactly that. It's a tool, but it streamlines the huge data sets that we have and produces some products that are artificial intelligence based. And we sit as the team and go through an iterative process of confirming those artificial intelligence projects. If we have created an impression that we've only applied this tool in Maluteapofung, then we have made a big mistake. It's got general applications. We have just used Maluteapofung as an example of the applications of artificial intelligence in the context of 4IR and how geoscience for innovation thematic area is already in place in all that we do in the Council for Geoscience. Our water ingress project, we had given you quite a mouthful during the oversight visit. We thought that for the purpose of this presentation and given the time that we have, there's so much more that we do that is not reflected in the presentation on account of the volume and the time that we have. The spectacular work that we are doing, not only as the Council for Geoscience, but it is the acid mine drainage program of government in which we participate with the ingress part. You would have seen that MINTEC participate in other technical aspects. The Department of Water and Sanitation and its entities are participating in other aspects of water ingress. For our purposes, we are, I think that since we started with the water ingress program, I can confidently say that we are saving this country in excess of 380 million liters of water per annum. But those are the figures I just need to verify with the team. And so there's incredible progress that has been made with the water ingress project in the context of acid mine drainage management in its entirety. In addition to that, there's passive water treatment project. A pilot is located in Middelburg. We have been running this pilot. It is at the advanced stages of piloting it, and the results are absolutely positive. And we'd like to invite you at some stage to demonstrate how the plight of clean water in the Mpumalanga coal fields is beginning to be turned around with geoscientific research and intervention. I hope that that answers the questions that you have asked, Honorable Malinga. Chair, I think yours is largely at the department level, but certainly the products that are developed by and large and to a very large extent, we do work with the DDG responsible for policy and investment promotion, and coordination happens at that level, but I'm sure that the department will articulate that far more crisply and elegantly than I can ever imagine. Thank you very much, DG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Mabuza. Can we have Sanedi? Thank you.
Thanks, DG. I will start with the question around the graph. I think it's an easier one. Around the graph information on the slide, my apologies. I just noticed that it doesn't have a heading. That is indicative of the historical performance of the core programs. So that's what that slide was supposed to indicate. I just skipped it during the presentation just to try and manage the time. And then I will go on to the question around the funding, the EU funding. I think the concern there was around the conditions that are attached to the funding. There are no conditions that came with the funding to us. This is money that is secured through the National Treasury secured by the department, through the National Treasury for an energy efficiency project, and it doesn't come with any conditions attached to it. The contract will be signed by the National Treasury, and then through us it comes through as an allocation. Just to say maybe on the side, the only condition that we have is whatever monies that are not spent by the end of the financial year will then have to be surrendered back to the National Treasury. So that is just on the funding. And then on the question around the smart grids, the future project that we have there on the smart grids, we don't normally do the work that we do in isolation. So the Department of Energy is involved. The department is involved, and also we would involve other stakeholders such as FALGA and the National Treasury. Then that also helps in terms of making sure that whatever outputs that come out of this research then is also something that can be taken forward for implementation. So just to give a highlight there, but obviously it's still a future research that is going to be done. And we do take the comment that it needs to not just only be a research report, but it needs to end up as being something that is actually aiding implementation and improvement in the, at municipal level. And it's, that's exactly what we would like to see happening. On the question around the access to information through our website, I think this issue was raised the last time we were here presenting our annual report. And subsequent to that, what we did is we have a commissioned work around the improvement of the website so that it's more user-friendly, more interactive, and that access to information is made easier. So that work is ongoing. So we're hoping that the next time that you visit our website, then you'll be able to easily engage with the website and be able to access or all the information that you're looking for from our website. So that project is ongoing. So hopefully in the next 2 months or so, we will then be able to engage with a much better website and get access to that information. But in the interim, all the information that we have produced is available. And if any member would like to have access to that information, then we can just send that information through. But yeah. Think that was all of the questions that were raised. Oh yeah, and then also in terms of how is the information shared, usually when the reports are finalized, we will have workshops and seminars. We will invite a number of stakeholders and present this information to the stakeholders and make the research information available as well. So that's usually how we disseminate the information to the stakeholders and also through our website as well. Thanks. I think that is everything. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. So I think that's the last report, the responses from our CEOs. Thank you.
I'm muted. Thank you, honorable members. Unfortunately, we've got this enemy of the people, all of us called time. But I'm sure, like I said, we have interacted. There is some task or work that we had assigned, especially the two entities, which is Council for Geoscience and MinTech. But let me say this: I know sometimes I always say when we meet as a committee, that we exist as a committee, we didn't establish ourselves. We were established by the Committee of Parliament. It understood the relevance of this committee. I know sometimes people, when things are being raised, they tend to be very emotional attached to who or what they are. I think the point that members were raising is that maybe in our own discussions, but it will help to be guided specifically, because in some cases, certain institutions get established because at that time, there is a demand for such. But with new developments that are taking place and processes that continue to emerge, it does happen at times that you will then have a redetermination of that process. So from time to time, any organization and any strength of that organization must always be tested. So when the issues are being raised, it's in the same way that matters were raised with regards to the three entities under SAF, whether is it does it make sense to have them in the manner they are? How do we streamline so that they can be a response that is comprehensive on the current challenges? So I think for me, there is no doubt about it, honorable members. From time to time, we need to, and it's not new, to have this engagement, including on how do we locate the issue of the research institution in the form of SANEDI. I could see the difficulty when there was a response with regards to the issues that members were raising. I think they were raising it in the context of an improvement that is required from time to time going forward, and to relook and review the approach. On that note, honorable members, we are far outside our allocated time, but let me again appreciate your spirit that you were prepared, that after such a long day, started with your committee, you then took a few minutes of breaks, went back to the plenary, and now you are back here. That, for me, is some degree that demonstrates our commitment to ensure that we serve the nation, we serve the country to the best of our abilities. On that note, let me declare the meeting adjourned for now until further notice. Thank you very much, honorable members. Thank you, Acting DG and your team, including CGS, MinTech, and SANEDI. Thank you very much. I won't say what I said somewhere. I nearly mistaken the acting CEO of SANEDI with another voice of my committee member who happened not to be in the meeting. I would have loved to hear both of those voices. Maybe it's me, I was mistaken. But on that note, thank you very much. The meeting stands adjourned.
Recording stopped.
Thank you, Chair.